know the benefits of hitting, you know, the national guidelines of physical activity, but just 11 minutes sounds a little bit more approachable, right? Like, not only is it going to be great for your physical health and your disease risk reduction, but it's also going to boost your mood. It's going to give you that extra productivity, that creativity in your day. Our health is our wealth, as they say, right? Without our health, unfortunately, we have nothing.
Hello and welcome to the Experts in Health podcast, brought to you by Loughborough University. This podcast aims to highlight the latest research and trends in health as we welcome a variety of guests from a host of different disciplines. I'm Dr. Chris McLeod, an academic in the School of Sport, Exercise and Health Sciences with an expertise in behavioural nutrition and public health. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Lavina Mehta, MBE. Lavina is an author, a personal trainer, a keynote speaker on health, and very importantly, a mum of three. Lavina, it's wonderful to have you on the podcast today. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for the lovely intro.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to chatting with you about all of your experience, your expertise. But the first thing I want to know is how do you balance all of those things, especially being a mum of three, which is a full-time job in itself for most people?
It's a juggle, I won't lie. But I guess I'm doing something that I never imagined and something that I really love and I'm very, very passionate about. So somehow it kind of works, and I get amazing support from my three boys and my husband, like all my family. So I'm very blessed that they are kind of supporting this whole new journey for me. But yeah, it's a juggle. I guess anyone listening will probably wonder, work, family, kids, and life. I guess life is so fast paced these days. But yes, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I'm just go riding the wave, as you say.
Oh, well, I'm glad you could find some time to talk to us today. Just to help our listeners and our viewers, can you tell us a little bit about yourself further to the sort of little intro that I did for you?
Oh, thank you. So I am now 46 as of just a few weeks ago. And mum of three boys. I left the corporate world. In short, I was a global project manager for a very large corporate, BP at the time, and loved my previous career. But after motherhood and having three boys, I then gave it all up. And I basically fell in love with fitness pretty late in life, which is something I love pointing out. So it's not like I was sporty or athletic or into it at school, really. I think I just ticked all the boxes. And I went on my own sort of feel-good journey, as I call them, you know, sticking to my sort of feel-good with Lavina brand. And it was strength training, really, which I started in my early 30s when I had joined the gym, but I wasn't really getting many major results. At the time, I'll be honest, I'd put on a lot of weight after my pregnancy. And I guess like a lot of South Asians as well, I started worrying about things like diabetes, which is so prevalent in my community. And I joined the gym purely to kind of reduce my weight and my size. But the benefits of strength training were incredible, not just on physical benefits, but also the mental benefits. And I just fell in love with it that I decided to then study the courses. So level two to become a fitness instructor, and then level three to be a personal trainer. But it was all just for my own knowledge, because I really thought, gosh, this is amazing. And I wanted to learn about the science behind it. Never imagined that I'd want to sit exams again, and never even thought it would be a career. But a few friends started finding out when I'd qualified, and I started training women just one-to-one in my home basement. Lucky I had a little space away, and it was just during school hours. This is just before the COVID pandemic. And it was incredible. I learned so much from these women, you know, from the age of 30 to about 71, lots of different experiences, lots of different goals as well. So not just weight loss. And then the COVID pandemic hit. And at that point, I'd just been on Sky News, which was a very surreal moment, quite a big breakthrough, because they'd spotted my exercise snacking, which I can elaborate on. And I'd basically done an advent calendar in December 2019, where I'd just opened up my social media, my Instagram to the public. I was very private beforehand. And I just decided doing little exercise snacks in the most random places, from the park to the supermarket to, you know, home, and just trying to make people realize that we could do small bouts of movement. I thought this could be a game changer. And actually Sky News did pick it up, and I was on there a few times within a very short space, and I realized that I could help more people with that kind of platform. And yeah, I guess the COVID pandemic then hit in March 2020, and I very bravely just decided to do a lunchtime exercise snack with my husband and son, who agreed to come out with me in the garden and just have a bit of fun. And we never really realized or expected so many people to join globally of all ages. And we then turned it into an evening program as well, which was very structured. And this is before a lot of the fitness content really came out, because obviously it's amazing. I think one of the biggest benefits from the pandemic is the confidence it's given people, especially to realize that you can exercise and move from anywhere, from home especially. And yes, I guess the rest is history. I could go on, but
no, it's really interesting. What we love on this podcast is we get people on who are academic practitioners. We get people who are right at the heart of the NHS. And then we get those who are on the ground working with the members of the public and trying to understand it from a more bottom-up approach. And it was that engagement that you had with the public over COVID that ultimately, you know, engaged so many people, led to you having your MBE and this career that you've then had to this point. And one of the things that I noticed in your background that I've seen, you've been talking about this idea of sanity, not vanity, in terms of exercise, and you know, the feel good fix concept. Can you elaborate on those? What do you mean by those terms?
Definitely. So like I was explaining, it was the sort of mental health benefits I thought were just incredible, because I was in my 30s, I went through, you know, some difficult points in life, I think, like we all do. You know, social media just portrays the sort of picture perfect scenarios, but I'm always very real and I try to be as relatable as possible. But during my 30s, you know, I lost my father-in-law, who we lived with. He was very, very close to me. And I think it's points in life like that, challenges that you go through, that's when I realized the power of movement on my mental health. And it was in the COVID pandemic, actually, that I came up with Exercise for Sanity, Not Vanity. Very early on, I just thought, you know, I want us to reframe the way we look at exercise or movement or fitness, whatever you want to call it, more from how we look, but how it makes us feel. And I was experiencing it myself, and so were so many people. Like, the feedback, especially in the pandemic, was incredible. Where people would say, you know, I've joined your little quick snack, and within a few minutes, you can feel your mood change, the release of these feel-good endorphins, you know, which are the natural hormones that are just waiting to be released in your body through movement. So I came up with that. And, you know, I really think that mental health is such a huge topic. I ended up doing a TED Talk last year for teenagers and for children, literally, in the audience that day. But obviously, you can watch it for everyone. And it was titled Exercise for Sanity, Not Vanity, because I feel mental health is such a big topic and something that we really need to focus on for all ages. And I feel like, you know, movement can be that free drug, that free pill that is often underutilized, because there are so many barriers to exercise that I'm hoping to break. And the Feel Good Fix is the title of my new book. So when you said author, you know, that's still that kind of pinch me introduction. So I've written a book with Penguin Life, and it's out in May. And it's available to pre-order now. But it's all about all of my, I guess, the scientifically backed tools that I would love, especially women, because obviously I'm going through perimenopause and menopause at the moment. But I've had women up to the age of 100 join my chair-based workouts that I do with my dear mother-in-law. And it's really a way, the book is a very easy, accessible guide, I would say. It's not a heavy read. I want it to literally be one of those books that you can Have as your best friend. If you've got a moment, 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, there's lots of different tips and tricks in there and lots of snacks, not just exercise, but it also covers mental health. There's a whole section, probably a third of the book is around things that we can do for our mind, for our brain to keep them fit as well. Things around self-care, things around social connection, which is such a key, I feel, for longevity and leading a happy and healthy life, to sleep and to food. I feel also stress reduction. So it's a real guide, and I don't want it to be intimidating. I want it to really be accessible, fun, and all the things in the book are free, which I think is a definite plus point. And it's probably one of the biggest barriers, you know, in terms of cost, time and motivation. So trying to break all of those in the Feel Good Fix.
I want to come on to the sort of focus on accessibility that you've had, and how you've a lot of your work has focused on particular populations and trying to provide them with access to activity. But before I get onto that, there's academic literature out there talking about these, you know, short bursts of physical activity. And we had Professor Amanda Daly on the podcast last series and talking about some of her work that she does in that area, snacktivity. But that's from an academic perspective, from a research perspective. For you, as someone who works with people on the ground, what does the small bouts, the small little bits of exercise, snacks, actually, how does that feel for the people when they're engaging in it versus saying, let's train to run a 10K or a marathon or something like that?
I just think it's so much more approachable. I mentioned that we're leading such fast-paced, busy lifestyles. I think people almost give up and are quite hard on themselves when they can't fit in the hour-long workout. And I want everyone to know that it is scientifically backed. And I've mentioned, you know, the amazing work that Amanda and your team are doing at Loughborough University Snacktivity. I've mentioned that in the book as well. And I interviewed Amanda about it because for me, it's knowing the public. I want the public and every single person of every age to know that even a minute counts. And just by knowing that, I think it's so motivating. It gives you that confidence that actually, gosh, so even if I get up off my chair every hour or every 30 minutes, because we are leading such sedentary lifestyles where, you know, the stats are showing like 9 to 11 hours for the average person in England to be sitting a day. And we know how detrimental the sedentary lifestyle is to our health, to disease risks as well. So I can obviously touch on those in a minute. But I want everyone to realize that everything counts. And it's brilliant because I feel like it's a game changer, you know, that you often have people that maybe do hit that hour long workout in the morning. You know, some people can get up at 6:30 and manage the juggle of life. But then if you're sitting all day, you know, there's one study I quoted in the book around if you're sitting for 2 hours, it can actually negate 20 minutes of exercise, which to me, it's like, you know, a lot of us may be active couch potatoes, as I've kind of explained in the book, where you could hit that hour workout in the morning. But then if you're just stuck at your desk or if you're sitting on the sofa, you know, for long periods during the day, that's what I kind of want us to change, because, you know, I've touched on diabetes, type 2 and pre-diabetes, heart disease, osteoarthritis, osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease, like all of these big things, risk factors can be reduced by short bite-sized amounts of movement that you can often. I want to try and people to think of it as like a little treat. So not only is it going to be great for your physical health and your disease risk reduction, but it's also going to boost your mood. It's going to give you that extra productivity, that creativity in your day. It's a real change I think I want to make, you know, alongside obviously the academic work, but like you say, getting it into people's lives. And I think it's huge for motivation and confidence.
And I know that we all have ways that we might engage different people differently based on who we are, what expertise and skills we have. For you with Asian heritage, I know that you've worked a lot with Asian populations, and it's not just because you mentioned there's particular comorbidities with particular populations, but what do you think it is about, you know, your heritage that allowed you to engage people from that heritage as well?
Yeah, I guess when I grew up, you know, there was no real focus on health, you know, neither exercise nor the sort of nutrition side. So, you know, South Asians are, I think I felt, I was just before the pandemic, actually, that I did raise a UK campaign, which I titled Get UK Asians Fit, which I've also written about in the book. Because I was pretty alarmed around the stats. So South Asians at the time were 6 times more likely to have type 2 diabetes in the UK, and they were twice as likely to get cardiovascular disease. And I just thought, my goodness, this is something around education and awareness is definitely lacking. So I had, I guess, no real role models, you know, even when I started going on my own sort of feel good fitness journey as such, there was no one really that looked like me, no real representation from any South Asians at the time. And then obviously I qualified as a personal trainer at the age of 40, which is totally unheard of, I would say, in the sense that, you know, typically it wasn't even a career path or anything that my parents would have probably approved of if I'd suggested it to them in my 20s. So it's been it's been refreshing to see how the community has really enjoyed kind of absorbing a lot of the concepts that I've been putting out. I've loved the engagement, and I feel like we've made such progress just in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, you probably see on social media now that when I go out into communities and I often get, any event, I'll try and get people moving, even if it's just for a minute. And seeing all ages happy, the smiles on their face, to me, that is the greatest feedback of them all. But then the buzz around it, you know, when they start understanding, and when you mention things like diabetes in my community, I always ask the question, and everyone's hand goes up. They either know someone or they have it themselves, or so many young people are living with pre-diabetes, which is undiagnosed at the time. And exercise, lifestyle changes, you know, that means eating well, sleeping well, managing your stress. You can reverse these things, which I think is something that I never even knew about growing up.
And in addition to that work where there are reversible conditions that you're helping people with, there's other things which are less so, you know, one of them being the menopause and going through the menopause, and then just aging, the elderly, helping people who are sort of later in their years. What sort of work have you been doing particularly to work with those populations as well?
So menopause is probably a topic of its own. So the book is pretty focused on the symptoms of perimenopause, which, you know, 5 years ago, I don't think I'd even heard of the word perimenopause. Menopause, again, was one of those taboo subjects. In my South Asian communities, nothing even mentioned growing up around it. And it was the penny dropped for me I think it was 2 years ago, really. Then I realized that I'd been going through perimenopause from the age of 40. And that's something that, you know, I campaign very heavily about now. So I'm now patron of Menopause Mandate. And you probably see that we do try and raise a lot of awareness. And with my hat on, it's really to try and make especially South Asian women realize that we could potentially go through the menopause 5 or 6 years earlier than the average white female. So, you know, women in their late 30s could start experiencing symptoms and changes through their perimenopause, which can last up to a decade. It's very, very different for everyone. So I'm very keen to point that out. But it's staying in tune with our bodies. It's breaking the taboos. It's being an advocate for your own health. And yeah, in the book, I think, you know, I've broken it down with some of the common symptoms that women could experience. And I, you know, I want men to read it as well. I feel like menopause is a subject that everyone needs to be educated on so that the men can support the women in their lives, be it their wives, their sisters, their aunts, their daughters, or even their colleagues at work. So I'm very passionate about going into workplaces as well and talking about the menopause and just easy lifestyle tips that we can do. Because in the book, you know, I've done a lot of research around 11 minutes, which was a study that came out in 22. And 11 minutes seems to be just a nice, approachable number for us to at least aim for at the beginning to give people confidence. And that could be broken up into like a minute and then another 3 minutes or just little snacks through the day. But 11 minutes, that study shows, can help prevent 1 in 10 premature deaths. The stats were showing in that study also that you're 17% less likely to get cardiovascular disease, which I thought was pretty amazing, 7% less likely to get cancer. So when you start talking about common chronic illnesses and people can relate to them, right? So menopause is a big topic on its own. I'm there to be very relatable, very open about what I'm going through and how it's helped me. But I'm seeing how it's helping so many women just by adopting healthy lifestyle changes, whether you choose to be on hormone replacement therapy or not. I think that the point in midlife is key. It's fundamental for our long-term health. And that links on to how we age well, which is also covered in the book, because for me, you know, it was a breakthrough when I started seeing 70, 80, 90-year-olds try and join us in the COVID pandemic on Instagram, you know, let alone my parents that couldn't really, you know, use a mobile phone. My mum had never even had a mobile phone, but they were obviously trying to join on. And I wanted to try and build this community feeling, even though it was virtual. And yeah, the 100-year-old lady that we had join was from a care home in the UK. And it was just, I mean, you know, I pretty much quote that in every interview or any moment I can, because she was the one, just seeing her online, just moving, just doing it. She was doing a little bit of boxing with me, just seated, the smile on her face. I just thought, this is incredible. And she had Alzheimer's, which is what, you know, my grandmother had. And again, dementia and Alzheimer's was another taboo subject for me, being a South Asian. It was something that my family never really understood, never talked about. And it's another whole area that, you know, I've been trying to raise awareness about to obviously help communities understand exactly what it is and the power of physical activity. It's one of the best ways to reduce our risks of dementia and Alzheimer's. So, you know, I always say keeping our brains fit in the free workouts. I still do them every week. So please, everyone listening, please join in. And it's not just for the elderly now, although my goal is still to get into every care home in the UK, because I always have a soft spot, especially because my grandmother ended up being in a care home. And I feel, you know, now it's even people joining that are sitting at their desks for too long. You know, right now we're on screens or wherever you're listening. If you're sitting, I want you to know that you could just get up, you could do a little bit of movement, you know, have like a whole feel good fitness prescription, which doesn't cover anything that's too, I would say, you know, difficult to do. It's all very easy. You don't have to have fancy equipment. You don't even need to change into gym clothes. It's stuff that we can adopt during our day. And I think the fact that some of the exercises you can do seated is quite exciting for people that are stuck behind Zoom screens. You know, if you're not needed on a virtual meeting, you could easily turn your cameras off. And the amount of people that say to me, I've got back pain and neck pain, and we're constantly, you know, rounding our backs because of screens and technology. You know, I see it with my children as well. That it's simple movements, mobility work, stretches that we can do when we're sitting. So, yeah, the elderly, my work with them has been, I guess, the most fulfilling. Like every Friday, I will go live with them on YouTube and on Zoom. And it's the most rewarding experience seeing people like that move with me that may not have moved before.
I love that. I'd love to see that myself. I always quote my grandmother. She was, bless her, she died 3 years ago at time of recording, and she was 103, and she was physically active all the way to the end, and, you know, just would be able to stand up from the chair. And I know that, you know, the other side of the coin, people, and many people don't live to 103, and trying to understand just, you know, to, apart from the genetics, what is it about their lifestyle factors that also either contributed to longevity or meant that any risk factors in their genetics didn't play out as strongly as well? So I'm really interested by that.
But
I wanted to know from my perspective, if I was a person listening to this, and maybe someone who's going through the menopause or someone who's later in life. What can you give a tip, an example of an activity that they could do, considering the particular needs that they might have because of their age or what they're going through?
So, amazing that your grandmother could still stand up. So I often do these sit and stands, as I call them, which is, you know, literally from your chair, hopefully being able to stand ourselves and stay as independent as we can for as long as possible. But another option is, you know, even right now when we're sitting, and in terms of just lifting one leg off the ground, but actually placing your hands on your quadricep muscles. I'm hoping you're doing this now, Chris. And just thinking about the mind to muscle connection. So I would say the biggest thing I would want all ages to do is to do strength training. And that means that you can start off with just your body weight. You know, we don't need to worry about lifting heavy weights, but simple leg extensions, simple heel raises that you're doing seated. Heel raises are brilliant because there's science to show us now that the calf, the soleus muscle, is brilliant at absorbing excess blood sugar. So brilliant after a meal, you know, if you're stuck in a restaurant or if you're still eating and you don't want to leave the family table, I often just do heel raises because that's just such an easy trick. No one even knows you're doing them under the table. But sit and stands, I would say, are, you know, like mimicking the squats. And with strength training, especially, you want to try and progress over time. So ideally, if you're able to stand up or to do a squat, I would then say, you know, add in a rucksack, add in some little tins or plastic bottles. You can't see them behind me, but, you know, we always show in all of our free Friday feel good workouts, just the different types of things that you could use, safe household objects. It doesn't have to be dumbbells or barbells, so it's not intimidating to anyone. So lower body, I would say, you know, that's a brilliant, a couple of different ideas to do depending on your level, that you could do seated or you could do standing, and you could progress if you can with heavier weights gradually over time, but just always listening to your body. And then for the upper body, things like wall press ups. So if you're able to stand, I think I started with no upper body strength on my strength training journey. And now, obviously, you know, I love doing press ups. I love doing pull ups, but I was never this strong. So I know how difficult it can be at the beginning, but just building your strength up for your upper body muscles. A press up is a compound exercise, so it uses multi-muscle, multi-joint. And my goal is for this to be normalized in, you know, workplaces, when you're waiting for coffees in shops or wherever, you could just grab a wall and you could just do 10 wall press ups to when you're cooking or when the kettle's boiling. And you could the next level would be going a little bit lower and, you know, someone's countertop in the kitchen by the stove, obviously be safe, is a great level to then progress to before you start, you know, moving towards the ground. But it's simple movements like that that I want to encourage that are going to help build people's muscle mass. And we know that muscle mass and our bone density starts decreasing after the age of 30, but especially, you know, for women, especially through perimenopause and menopause, that decrease in muscle mass and bone density is just heightened even more. So we lose even more. And the importance now science is really showing us, and I think, you know, this is something that I never grew up with, is the understanding that strength training has to be ideally part of everyone's fitness routine. You know, strength moves, I would say there's a couple there, but things like lunges to, you know, things like if you're able to lie and lift your hips up like a glute bridge, to even simple things like if you weren't able to stand, we do things like using baked bean tins, bicep curls and shoulder presses. So you're mimicking functional movements, like just being able to lift up and put something on your shelf yourself. And it's linking, you know, why we want to age well, right? It's about our health span rather than our lifespan. So again, I've written a lot about that in the book, but it's really changing the way we look at exercise. And I hope making it fun, making it accessible, making it easy will hopefully break some of those barriers, you know, that people have.
I think you mentioned a really interesting and important barrier, I think, because it chimes with the work that I do in my work, and that's trying to break down social norms that don't need to be there from a safety perspective. Because, you know, I'm a leg jiggler personally, and it was interesting to hear that work that you said about the soleus, you know, and how that might take into my blood sugar. But in a meeting recently, I was sat down and I just needed to get up because I'm not very good at sitting down when I'm doing a podcast. It's the time where I probably either sat down the most. But just being able to do a wall press up in the kitchen at work, or just deciding that you're going to stand up and sit down 10 times over the course of a minute. At the moment, that's seen as a bit odd if you did that, but there's no reason as to why you can't do that, why you shouldn't do that. But it needs more and more people to talk about it, to become aware of it, and to do it before it becomes normalized, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you've probably seen, I don't know if you've seen on my social media, on my YouTube shorts, I think I've posted, you know, times where I've done it outside number 10 Downing Street. I've done, I got an MP once in Parliament to get down, and he was just showing me his press ups, and just the ripple effect has on everyone around him. It's that normalizing. It's getting, you know, us in our offices to do these things. I mean, it just takes one person, and I want everyone to start exercise snacking. I feel like, you know, especially in the workplace where you may be slightly conscious, if we've got hour long meetings where people are just sitting, I hope that people start or end their meeting, or even midway, you could just do a little bit of movement, even if it's just some star jumps, even if it's just sitting here while we're, you know, we often do just get your steps in on the spot and just moving your legs, moving your arms, you're going to raise your heart rate, you know, and cardiovascular aerobic activity is so, so important. You know, I'm saying about strength training, but that's in addition, I'm hoping, to easy snacks. And I feel like walking for me is, you know, has been therapy. You know, that's really my exercise for sanity, not vanity. And I've done a lot of research around why it was helping me so much. I sometimes got some of my most crazy, you know, creative activities, like, you know, the ideas that I've got over the last few years that, you know, people would think I'm a bit nuts, but you know, I think people are enjoying now, have been on some of those walks or some of those moments where I can be outdoors. And if you're feeling, you know, there's so many barriers where people are feeling demotivated, especially, you know, through menopause, if you haven't slept well, sleep is such a key part of our healthy lifestyle. But sometimes if you haven't slept, you're not going to have that energy. Sometimes if you've got crippling symptoms, you know, from an illness or whatever you've got, I say to people, if you're able to walk, just get outdoors. And I was never an outdoors person. But the fact that, you know, the fresh air will boost your productivity, your mood, release those endorphins again, it'll boost your self-esteem and confidence. And nature is one of those things that, you know, I've done a whole section in my book on nature and the power of it. And it doesn't mean that you have to go into a full forest and do the full forest bathing experience. But there's a lot of science just showing that exposure to trees, even if it's just in your garden and you're pacing around, even if It's just up and down, you know, a street with trees. But if you can maybe get away from looking at our phones, because we're all so addicted to them, and exposing yourself to that natural sunlight as well. You know, I often put, I think every day on my Instagram stories, I call them feel good walks, but it could just be 5 minutes where, you know, that exposure to sunlight is going to help your natural circadian rhythm and it's going to help your sleep. So it's connecting things that we can do, the free tools, to maybe the symptoms that you're feeling. And then I'm hoping that people will, you know, feel the benefits. You'll really see them and feel them. And that's what will help us in terms of making these long-term sustainable lifestyle changes.
And I think you highlight really well about how we don't have to find necessarily a new time in the day to do exercise, with a capital E for exercise. It's what can you do in your current setup that will enable you to move a little bit more? Is it that you can, yeah, whilst you're waiting for the kettle to boil, can you do something? Whilst you're at your desk, can you do something? If you need a phone call, or, you know, it's just to catch up with someone, or a meeting, can you go walking whilst you're doing that? You know, all of those things. I think it's really important that you highlight it. One thing I would love to know, though, let's say in behavior change model, we may talk about people having the capability, the opportunity, and the motivation to be able to engage in a novel behavior. Let's say there is the capability and there's the opportunity, but the person hasn't quite reached a point where there's some intrinsic or extrinsic motivator to help them forward. What would you say to someone who's struggling with their motivation, where their natural environment isn't at the moment put together to help them be physically active? What would you say to them?
So I used to use this question back when I trained women one-to-one before the pandemic. And it's always like going back to your why. And you may have heard that question and you're just thinking, oh, you know, what does she really mean by that? And my why has changed so much, you know, from not just, it's not about how I look now, it's about how I can stay as healthy as possible for as long as possible. And I always think about, you know, my why often is how I'm going to be able to keep moving my body, because I know that that gives me such joy. But going back to your why, it could be, you know, if either you've got a health concern, either you've got a goal of some sort, you know, or if you do need to lose weight, because even though I say it's not about weight loss as such, but we do need to try and maintain a healthy weight to reduce our risk of so many of these common chronic illnesses. So I often encourage people to have a real deep dive into what is your why. And it could be something that doesn't come straight away to you, not like a superficial goal, like I want to, you know, go get into a bikini on the beach and have the six pack, which I think is, you know, so unattainable and often detrimental to especially women that are going through menopause. And, you know, it can be something that's really meaningful to you. And everyone's is so different. And again, you know, I've written in the book around the power of things like journaling and actually sitting down and taking time to do just a quick exercise like that. And you can always revise that as you go. But I think you've got to dig deep and think about why you want to do this. And then I guess it's always, you know, my biggest tips are always to start off small. So that's where I think the beauty of exercise snacking is, that it is that little first few steps, you know, that you start building up to. Like we do eventually, yes, we know the benefits of hitting, you know, the national guidelines of physical activity, but just 11 minutes sounds a little bit more approachable, right? Like I think we can all find 11 minutes, especially, and if you can't find 11 minutes in one go, you can even just do a minute here and there. So you've got to dig deep. And obviously it is about your own personal mindset, like when that light bulb moment happens. But I hope people try different techniques, because I think everyone is so different that you've got to do something that you enjoy. That is the bottom line. Like whatever I say about, you know, doing squats or whatever exercise it is, you know, the book has over like 80 snacks and it has like little QR codes linking to videos. So you can even try and move with me. Just to give you a flavor, it's almost like a pick and mix style that I want people to have in their approach to lifestyle changes. It's not a fitness plan as such. It's nothing regimental. I'm not saying, you know, do this for 30 days and you're guaranteed this. This is something that I want people to be able to do of all ages for their whole lifestyle for the long term.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a wonderful message to put to people. And it seems to me that your why was came 6 years ago. And, you know, being on this quite meteoric rise in, over that time in engaging people to do small bouts of physical activity, and, you know, you're an ambassador for different charities and causes, Alzheimer's, diabetes, etc. What's your next step? What are you doing next then?
Oh, gosh. I never know how to answer this question, because I hand on heart say this has been such an amazing, surreal few years for me. And, you know, it's an opportunity to say thank you to everyone that has supported my ideas, maybe taken part in my workouts, just maybe shared them with their loved ones. So I'm just very grateful for everything I've been able to do today. I guess, you know, the main focus right now is I've written the book so that it captures everything that I'm passionate about, but it's backed by science, and I want it to help as many people as possible. You know, the book is a kind of something that I am obviously working on now to try and get out there as widely as possible. And yeah, that's the main focus at the moment, as well as, you know, keeping up as much as I can do to help people out there. So anyone listening, you know, that may be a little bit stuck, you know, please feel free to use any of my exercise snacks, or join us on Fridays in our live workouts, which are all saved on my YouTube as well. And yeah, I just want to keep going. I want to raise as much more awareness around health. I want there to be, you know, more research, especially in women's health, and more representation out there. I want, you know, the fact that hopefully I'm there for, you know, a younger or another South Asian, especially female, to maybe just see someone that looks like them. And, you know, I do keep it very real on my socials as much as possible. I hope that just helps. So it's more awareness and helping more people, I guess, is my goal.
And if you were to speak to that younger person who saw you and thought that you looked like her mum or her auntie, but you know, you had a chance to talk to them and say why what you're doing in trying to get the public more active, why that is important, how would you try to sell that to that next generation? Why should they do what you're doing?
Yeah, so going back to my TED talk, that was, you know, like teenage children going through obviously things like exams, you know, which I've done with, you know, all three of my boys. And the way I was telling them is, you know, the exercise is going to actually grow your brain, you know, like it actually keeps your brain fit. It's trying to keep things relatable, because I know even during like exam pressure, when I was younger, you know, the techniques around just breathing and the power of our breath and what I call breath snacks, even just taking that mindful minute. And I have so many in the book for people to try out. But, you know, going back to that younger self, it's being maybe able to look at if they've got their grandparents alive and well. And I know when you're young, you're not thinking that far ahead. But yes, think if you can start thinking about how you may want to be that person, just like your, you know, grandmother, Chris, and how she lived to 103. But it's probably more relatable thinking about what they can do right now. And I think, you know, mental health, like we touched on, especially for the younger generation right now, and the stresses of, you know, social media has been an incredible tool for me to be able to amplify and communicate my messages. But we know how it can be quite negative and detrimental for younger people. So it's not trying to kind of fall under the pressures and the negative side of it. But I guess what I'm saying is that I hope younger people really understand the importance of their health, but you've got to try and keep it a bit more relatable to things that maybe they're going through at the moment. So Yeah, anyone listening, you know, like I think the world is your oyster, and our health is our wealth, as they say, right? Without our health, unfortunately, we have nothing. But hopefully the younger the better, and the earlier you start. But at the same time, it's never too late to start, as I've seen with the elderly as well.
And where can everyone listening hear more about you? Where can they, you know, you mentioned your social media channels, just yeah. Lay them out for us so people know where they can go.
Oh, thank you. So yes, I'm on Instagram mainly, and you'll probably be able to see everything I'm up to in my stories at Feel Good with Lavina. I'm on all other social platforms. So that's Facebook, Twitter, on Feel Good with Lavina. My website is feelgoodwithlavina.com. And everything is saved on YouTube. We also go live every Friday, so please join us. And if you want to join us by Zoom, which is wonderful, as well as a community, I have a free newsletter that you can sign up to for the Zoom details on my website. And I would love everyone to check out my new book, The Feel Good Fix, which is available on all retail outlets to pre-order if it's before May the 30th, or order online. So places like Amazon and Waterstones, very easily accessible. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you once again so much, Lavina, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Not at all. And thank you so much for tuning in. If you've liked what we've talked about today, then feel free to like or subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. And you can also check out our other podcast, Experts in Sport. And you can find a link to that in the show notes. So that just leaves me to say once again, thank you so much for tuning in. And I look forward to welcoming you back to another health-related discussion in a future episode. Bye-bye for now.